Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Holding the Line, Women in the Great Arizona Mine Strike of 1983 is Barbara Kingsolver's first nonfiction book, built from reportage, oral history, and social observation. It examines the 18-month Phelps Dodge copper mine strike in southern Arizona and focuses especially on the wives, sisters, and daughters of striking miners who became organizers, advocates, and public voices in their own right. Rather than treating the labor dispute as a narrow workplace conflict, Kingsolver shows how the strike reshaped family life, gender roles, and community power. The book matters both as a historical record of an important labor struggle and as an early example of the humane, politically alert writing that would later define Kingsolver's fiction and essays. Its purpose is not only to document events, but also to show how collective action, economic pressure, and private hardship intersect in everyday lives. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, an oral history of the Phelps Dodge strike centered on lived experience. The book is structured less like a conventional labor history and more like a field report assembled from interviews, observation, and narrative testimony. That method matters because the strike is presented through the people most affected by it rather than through management, union strategy, or abstract economics alone. Kingsolver records how mining town life changed over the long confrontation and lets ordinary families explain what the shutdown meant in practical terms: lost wages, uncertainty, fear, and social division. This approach gives the book immediacy and credibility while also making it clear that labor conflicts are lived events, not just political headlines. By relying on firsthand voices, Kingsolver preserves the texture of speech, emotion, and local knowledge that more detached histories often miss. The result is a book that works as documentation and interpretation at the same time. Secondly, women as organizers, not bystanders, in a labor struggle. A central argument of the book is that women were not peripheral supporters of the strike, but active participants who helped sustain it. Kingsolver focuses on wives, sisters, and daughters who had to learn how to speak publicly, organize community support, and navigate pressures inside and outside their homes. In that sense, the strike becomes a story about political awakening through necessity. The women are forced to move beyond familiar domestic roles because the economic crisis threatens the stability of their families. Kingsolver shows that this shift was not symbolic only. It involved real labor in fundraising, protest coordination, communication, and moral support. This emphasis also changes how labor history is read, because it reveals that workplace conflict often depends on unpaid, informal, and gendered forms of collective effort. The book therefore broadens the definition of activism and shows how social movements are sustained by people who are often invisible in official accounts. Thirdly, how the strike transformed gender expectations in mining communities. The book pays close attention to the way the strike altered expectations about what women could do and what kind of public authority they could claim. In the mining towns Kingsolver describes, traditional gender boundaries had kept many women at the edge of political life, even when they were deeply affected by economic decisions. The strike pushed those boundaries outward. As women took on organizing roles, they gained confidence, visibility, and a stronger sense of their own judgment. Kingsolver treats this not as a simple success story, but as a complex social change shaped by hardship. The transformation was tied to conflict, fatigue, and fear, because new roles emerged under pressure rather than in comfortable circumstances. Still, the book argues that crisis can reveal capacities that ordinary routines conceal. This makes the work important for understanding how labor disputes can become catalysts for broader cultural change, especially in communities where economic survival and family identity are tightly linked. Fourthly, economic injustice and the human cost of corporate power. Holding the Line is also a critique of the economic and institutional forces that shape the strike. Kingsolver presents the conflict as more than a disagreement between labor and management. It is a struggle in which corporate power, legal pressure, and public indifference all contribute to hardship for working families. The book emphasizes how quickly rights can become fragile when people depend on employers for basic security. That theme gives the narrative contemporary relevance because it links one strike in Arizona to broader questions about power, dignity, and access to fair treatment. Kingsolver's perspective is clearly sympathetic to the strikers, but she does not reduce the book to propaganda. Instead, she shows the practical consequences of prolonged conflict-depleted savings, emotional strain, family tension, and the constant need to justify one's suffering to outsiders. This focus on material cost makes the book especially effective as social criticism, because it shows that economic injustice is not an abstraction, but a daily condition that shapes behavior, relationships, and self-respect. Lastly, Barbara Kingsolver's early nonfiction style and its lasting significance. The book is important not only for its subject, but also for what it reveals about Kingsolver's development as a writer. Even in this early work, her strengths are clear close listening, moral seriousness, and the ability to connect public issues with intimate human detail. The nonfiction form allows her to build trust through specificity, while also drawing out larger patterns about class, gender, and community. Readers familiar with her later novels will recognize the same concern with social justice and the same attention to people living under pressure. At the same time, the book shows a more explicitly journalistic discipline than her fiction, since it remains anchored in reporting rather than invention. That combination makes it distinctive among labor books. It is both witness and interpretation. Written by an author who understands how narrative can carry political meaning without flattening the people involved. Its lasting significance lies in that balance of empathy, observation, and structural critique. In conclusion, Holding the Line should be read by anyone interested in labor history, women's history, documentary nonfiction, or Barbara Kingsolver's work more broadly. It is especially useful for readers who want to understand how a strike changes not only wages and workplace relations, but also family structures, gender expectations, and the emotional life of a community. As a nonfiction account, it offers more than a record of events. It demonstrates how oral history can preserve voices that formal histories often overlook. That makes the book valuable to students, general readers, and anyone studying the intersection of economics and social power. What sets it apart from many books about labor conflict is its sustained attention to women as active historical agents, rather than supporting figures. Kingsolver also avoids a narrow polemical frame by grounding her argument in lived experience, which gives the book both human warmth and analytical force. It remains a compelling example of how narrative nonfiction can illuminate injustice without losing sight of individual complexity. If you would like to support Barbara Kingsolver, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.